Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
I'm John Batchelor with the author Hampton Sides. His new book is The Wide, Wide Sea, Imperial Ambition, First Contact, and the Fateful Final Voyage of Captain James Cook. Cook makes a decision not to winter with the Russians in Kamchatka, but to head to, not even Tahiti, let's go back to Hawaii. So they head south, and in January of 79, they come through to the Hawaiian Islands. First they're around Maui, and then they're around Big Island, but he doesn't land. What's his thinking, Hampton?
Well, he's come to Hawaii to warm up, to spend the winter, to replenish his ships, and to let his men thaw out a little bit, right? He also, at this point, doesn't want too much contact with the native people. He knows that his men, many of his men, have venereal disease. He does not want his men, you know, fornicating with the local women on the beach. He writes about this extensively in his journal. Like, these are innocent people. They do not have this disease. We do not want to inflict it on them. So his idea is to circumnavigate the Big Island and trade via canoes with the local people who would come out in their canoes and they would trade things, but control the bartering to a certain extent and also make sure that his men weren't coming ashore. But slowly but surely, they go all the way around the island. Meanwhile, Cook is charting the Big Island. He understands this is a major, major find and that the Admiralty back in England is going to want to know all about it. But he's like doing this weird dance where he's just offshore, flirting with the island, but not actually letting his men set foot on it until finally, after a number of storms and problems with the ship, they finally he realizes they do have to anchor somewhere. And they find this harbor called Kealakeakua Bay on the Kona coast, the west coast of Hawaii. And they come ashore at this unbelievably serendipitous time, which is the height of a festival called the Makihiki, which honors the god Lono, the god of fertility. And as they come ashore, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of canoes in the harbor, and they're all in rapturous, you know, revelry. They're having this great festival, and they seem to think that Captain Cook is the god Lono returning, just as the prophecies had said that he would return in this fashion, in this direction, a clockwise circumnavigation of the island, that he would come in these two big ships, and that he would come during the festival. So weird timing. Anthropologists have studied and argued about this forever. Like, did they really think he was the god Lono or some kind of manifestation of the god? But he comes ashore. They call him Lono. They bring him to the temple dedicated to Lono. And he is the central figure in this elaborate ritual. It's very strange. He seems to be a god. And the thing is, though, he does very little, if anything, to disabuse the Hawaiians of this notion. Like, he goes along with it. He seems to say, well, Mia, they think I'm a god. Well, good. They'll give us more food and timber and water. And, so he goes along with this pageantry for a number of weeks.
And then January 26th, after all of this, now his log stops earlier in January, but on January 26th, they're ready to leave and they have a sense that they've overstayed their welcome. So they set sail, but a mast cracks before they can leave the islands and they turn back and land a second time in February. What do I have the date? February 1779. And mm-hmm. This time they're not welcomed. Why not?
Well, they're, you know, at this point, he's sort of like a god out of season. The Makahiki is now over. Lono is supposed to go away. It's a new season. It's a season of war. And furthermore, if they ever thought he was a god, they certainly understood he wasn't one now. You know, his ship broke. What kind of god lets his canoe mast snap like that? They had overstayed their welcome. They, you know, had sort of eaten the Hawaiians out of house and home, eaten all their pork and eaten all their fish. And, you know, at this point, the Hawaiians have a very different attitude about Cook and his men. They are not welcome. And things start again, this whole thing of theft starts happening again, but at a much higher level. They steal various tools, a sextant, all kinds of instruments from the observatory go missing, and Cook goes into one of his rages again, the rage that we had seen on some of the other islands. And he completely loses it. And his good judgment that he had exercised in so many other places seems to have left him, particularly when they steal a small, like a rowboat. One of the boats that the ships needed was taken in the night, and he marches ashore in a rage to try to kidnap the king of Hawaii for ransom. So that, you know, bring him to the ships and hold him for ransom until that stolen boat would be returned. But this leads to this escalating series of kind of misunderstandings and miscues. And it very quickly becomes a melee on the beach, on the lava flats there at Kealakekua Bay that ends in Cook's very graphic and very violent death.
Yes, the death of Captain Cook became a central moment for the Enlightenment. I ran across wallpaper that the French had showing the death of Captain Cook. Everybody knew about it. Your presentation is extremely dramatic and detailed, and you're with Cook as he doesn't run, he doesn't flee, he doesn't swim. The boats are offshore, and there might be some overhead water between him and the boats. The boats don't come in, the pinnaces with his marines. The marines open fire. However, when we come to Cook, he doesn't run. He doesn't flee. He stands there staring at hundreds of warriors. And when they throw rocks at him, he shields the back of his head as he's walking away. What is your sense of what he was trying to convey at that moment, Hampton?
Well, I think, you know, he believed by this point that he understood Polynesian culture and Polynesian behavior, and had observed so many different islands. And I think, you know, he perhaps had a overzealous confidence in his own understanding. I mean, there were several moments there where he could have gotten away. You know, if he had run and jumped in the water, you said he didn't swim. Well, he couldn't. It's unbelievable to me. Most officers in the English, in the Navy, did not know how to swim. They weren't required to learn how to swim. So if he had just jumped in the water, he would have been saved, but he couldn't. So I guess in a sense, he was trapped there. But he also, you know, he's the captain. He's got to project authority, and he's got to project not just, you know, the face of the voyage, but in a sense, the face of England, the face of the entire country. And I think that leads to his death very quickly, because these are very fierce warriors and they want him out of there.
You've been to the spot of his death. There's a monument there. What does it look like? We have about a minute.
Yes, it's an obelisk, a very large obelisk that was erected by the British on a piece of land that was deeded to England. It's actually a little swatch of land owned by England, and it's dedicated to, it just mentions that he died there and that he had discovered this place. Of course, the Polynesians discovered it, not the English, but it's a very controversial place now. People go down there to either commune with his spirit or vilify his spirit. People, a lot of the native Hawaiians, of course, hate him, and they have vandalized that obelisk and spray painted it and splashed things on it and have tried to pull it down because they view him as a symbol of colonialism, and they wish he had never come So it's a very, you know, you can feel the energy and the sort of the juju emanating from this nerve center, this unbelievable place.
The Wide, Wide Sea. Hampton Sides is the author, Imperial Ambition, First Contact, and the Fateful Final Voyage of Captain James Cook. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.